as a bloom shoots up through the stony ground. There's no room, no space to rent in this town. You're out of luck, and the reason that you had to care, the traffic is stuck. Good morning and welcome to the Health Matters Radio Show. It's Monday, it's the 15th of April 2019. I hope you're all keeping very well and you all had a great weekend. So on today's show, we are going to be talking about HbA1c. I'm sure some of you have heard of it, particularly those of you that are diabetic. But maybe if you're not a diabetic, you may have had a HbA1c test done and you might wonder what it's all about. So I'm going to be talking about HbA1c. And towards the end of the show, I'm going to be talking about crash dieting and why, in my opinion, it's actually quite dangerous and can do a lot of long-term damage to the body. And in the middle, we have a special guest interview today. We have Leslie Proven. Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning.
It's great to have you on the show this morning.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And Leslie is a mind and body balance coach. And we're going to be finding out more about what Leslie does in about 20 minutes or so. So a quick reminder of the show's social media feed. On Twitter, it's at Health Radio Show. If you'd like to tweet in, drop me a tweet and I will respond to you. On Facebook, if you search the Health Matters Radio Show, you can follow and like the show's Facebook page. If you'd like to contact me via my website is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. And as usual, you can listen to this show and all previous shows on the media page of my website and also on the show's iTunes podcast feed. Go to iTunes and type in the Health Matters Radio Show, subscribe, and you will be kept up to date with all the latest shows. So a quick disclaimer before we start. The purpose of the Health Matters Radio Show is to provide you with competent information on the subject matters covered and to help educate and inform you in ways that you might be able to improve your own health. However, this is on the understanding that I'm not engaged in providing medical advice and the content in the show should not be treated as a substitute for such. If you have any concerns about your health, or you require medical or other expert assistance, please speak to a suitably qualified healthcare professional, which in many cases can be obtained by dialing 111 or speaking with your local pharmacist first. All the content is provided for general information only, and I encourage you to do your own research on the topics that we discuss. And the show is based on my knowledge, my research, my experience, and often my opinion. And I disclaim any liability that is incurred from the use of or application of the content of the show. So HbA1c. HbA1c is actually a relatively new blood test that's particularly good in picking up early type 2 diabetes and can also help current diabetics to manage their condition better. But HbA1c, for most people, they don't really know what it is. So I'm going to spend the next 10 minutes or so just explaining to you what it is, why it's important, and if you're particularly a type 2 diabetic, why you need to pay attention to the numbers. So HbA1c is basically broken into two parts. You've got the Hb and you've got the A1c. So the Hb is hemoglobin. So hemoglobin is the oxygen-carrying pigment that gives blood its red colour. And it's also the predominant protein in red blood cells. And about 90% of hemoglobin is hemoglobin A. And the A stands for adult. Okay? So whilst only one chemical component comprises, for the majority of hemoglobin A, about 92%. About 8% is actually made up of minor components, and this is where the A1C comes in. So most of hemoglobin comprises of one component, and about 8% comprises of lots of minor components. And one of these is A1C. You've also got A1B, you've got A1, and you've got A1A2. And it's the A1C that we're going to focus on this morning. So HbA1c is sometimes referred to glycated or glycosylated hemoglobin or glycohemoglobin. And this test is routinely performed with people, particularly with type 2 diabetes, but also type 1 diabetes as well. And if your doctor suspects that you might be in the pre-diabetic range, they may recommend that you also have a HbA1c check done as well. And basically, HbA1c levels are reflective of how well diabetes is being controlled and if you are at risk of developing diabetes in the coming years. So the normal range for HbA1c is normally less than 6%. And the reason it's important is it measures average blood glucose levels over the previous 2 to 3 months. And the reason it does this is that the glucose molecules attach to the blood cells, and blood cells generally live for about 90 days. So the good thing about HbA1c is it doesn't reflect the daily ups and downs of blood glucose. So that means that you don't have to fast before you have a HbA1c test done, and it isn't affected by day-to-day diet. Particularly, it's the average over 90 days. It also has some downsides, and I'm going to cover the downsides a bit later on. So if you've got high HbA1c levels, it can be an indicator, or higher than normal, it can be an indicator that you are in the pre-diabetic range and perhaps you need to make some diet or lifestyle changes to pull yourself away from the pre-diabetic range. But also, if you are a diabetic and your HbA1c is high, then that's an indicator that you have got poor control of your diabetes. So whether your medication's working properly, excuse me a sec, whether your diet is causing you problems, whether your lifestyle is causing you problems, HbA1c will be a good indicator. So as I mentioned, it's done through a blood sample. Normally has to go away to be tested, unlike normal blood glucose, which can normally be done then and there. It's not affected by these short-term fluctuations that happen between meals. So again, you don't need to fast. But the problem comes is when the HbA1c level is above 6%. So if you're at 6.5 or 7%, it can be an indicator that you have onset type 2 diabetes, and obviously will need to make some changes to your diet, to your lifestyle. And indeed, your doctor may suggest that you go on to medication. So some common symptoms of type 1 and type 2. Now, I've covered this on previous shows, but it is important because I still meet people on a day-to-day basis who exhibit symptoms of type 2 diabetes in particular, but they haven't had a blood test done for quite a long time, and they often put it down to just getting older. And actually, if you are pre-diabetic, or you indeed have type 2, but you don't know you've got type 2 and you're not managing it, then the complications can be quite serious. So I'm going to run through some symptoms that maybe you or someone that you know can recognize. And if you do recognize these and you haven't had a blood test done recently, then my suggestion would be perhaps to have a chat with your doctor and maybe have an up-to-date blood test done just to eliminate type 2 diabetes, if nothing else. So here's some symptoms. If you're constantly feeling tired, if you have excessive thirst, or if you're urinating a lot, if you have constant hunger, if you have cuts or bruises that take longer to heal than they perhaps used to, not always down to just getting older, that can be a symptom of type 2 diabetes. If you get frequent infections, so yeast infections are quite common, people with unmanaged diabetes, skin infections, and predominantly UTIs as well. If you get a lot of UTIs, particularly women, then that can be a symptom of type 2 diabetes. And the reason that is very simply that you're at a point where you're excreting glucose through your urine, and the bacteria that live in the genital area are feeding on that glucose, and obviously that causes the UTIs. If you have altered mental status, if you're agitated, if you're irritable, if you have lethargy or confusion, that can be a symptom of the high blood glucose affecting the brain. And blurry vision. So if you get intermittent blurry vision, so not constant necessarily, but perhaps you're driving down the road or walking down the street and your vision goes for a second or two and then comes back, don't ignore it, because that is a classic symptom of high blood sugar levels. So when should HbA1c be tested? Now, as I mentioned, you don't need to fast to have a HbA1c check done, because it's the average blood glucose over the last 2 or 3 months. But actually having a normal blood glucose level done at the same time, or certainly testing on a regular basis, particularly if you are type 2 diabetic, is absolutely critical. Depending just on HbA1c is not the way to go, in my opinion, and I'll explain why in a moment. So as I said, if you've got high HbA1c levels, it means you've got high blood glucose in you've got high glucose in your blood. And if you are on medication, as I say, if the medication isn't working particularly well, sustained high HbA1c levels will be an indicator of that. So if you have your blood sugars checked and you are not, or you think you're not a diabetic, and it comes back as higher than normal, there are some changes you can make to your diet and lifestyle, and dietary modifications are the biggest way that you can reduce down blood sugar levels without the need to go onto medication. But also physical activity is important as well. If you are a diabetic, a type 1 or type 2, you may have to go on to, well, certainly if you're a type 1, you'll have to go on to medication. If you're a type 2, you may have to go on to medication. And they can, you know, they can also help you to manage your diabetes as well. And regular HbA1c level checks will give you an indication as to whether your regime is working. Now, I mentioned there are limitations to HbA1c testing. So bear in mind that this is the average over 90 days. The average over 90 days is important, because you need to bring that down if it's high, because that will stop long-term health complications. And it may, if you're a type 2 diabetic, it may take you out of the diabetic range. The problem also comes with day-to-day fluctuations. So imagine if you're doing a journey from London to Edinburgh, and the average speed that you did over that journey was 70 miles an hour on the motorways. Well, you could say, well, I didn't break the law because my average speed was 70 miles an hour. However, during that journey, there were times when you were stuck in traffic, and equally there were times when you had an open stretch of road and you put your foot down and you were doing 140 miles an hour. Now, just because the average was 70 miles an hour doesn't mean that that was safe, because it's the times when you were speeding that is going to get you in trouble and potentially going to get you points and get your license taken away. And it's the same thing with blood glucose levels. Having an average is great, because it can be a measure of trends over time. However, on a day-to-day basis, you really need to understand how your blood sugar levels are being affected by your day-to-day diet, because it's the spikes in blood sugar that are going to cause you problems and health issues, particularly as you progress. So there you go, that's HbA1c. It's hemoglobin, it's the glucose that molecules are attaching to the protein, and it's an indicator of your average blood sugars over the last 90 days. And again, I will reiterate, in conjunction with regular day-to-day blood sugar testing, if you are a diabetic, it can be a great way to keep your diabetes under control. So after the break, we are going to go and go on to a guest interview with Leslie. But before we go on to that, we have a song from Van Morrison.
Hey, where did we go? skipping and a jumping in the misty morning fog with our hearts that thumping, and you, a brown eyed girl. And whatever happened to Tuesday and so slow? Gone down the old mine with a transistor radio. Standing in the sunlight laughing, hiding behind a rainbow's wall. Slipping and sliding all along the waterfall with you, a brown-eyed girl. We used to sing sha la 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 la, just like that. Sha la 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 la. You have grown. Cast my memory back there, Lord. Sometimes I'm overcome thinking about making love in the green grass behind the stadium with you, my brown eyed girl. Are you my brown eyed girl? Do you remember when we used to sing?
That was Van Morrison and Brown Eyed Girl. You're listening to the Health Matters Radio Show with me, Neil De Silva, on Monday, the 15th of April, 2019. And I don't know where you are, but in Kent, it's a fabulous day today. The sun is out, spring has sprung, and there's blue skies everywhere. So a quick reminder of the show's social media feed. On Twitter, it's at Health Radio Show. So drop me a tweet, ask me a question, and I will respond to you. On Facebook, if you search the Health Matters Radio Show, you can follow the show's Facebook page and get regular updates. If you'd like to listen again to this show or all previous shows, please go to the media page of my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk, or on iTunes. If you go to iTunes, type in the Health Matters Radio Show, and you can subscribe to the show's podcast. And as usual, if you'd like to contact me away from social media privately, then please do so through my website. Click on the contact page and drop me an email. Okay, so on to our special guest interview of the morning. Today we have Leslie Proven, and Leslie is a mind and body balance coach, and she has an interesting story to tell, and we're going to find out more about Leslie's background and also how she got into doing what she's doing and how she helps people today. So good morning, Leslie. It's great to have you on the show.
Good morning, Neil. Good morning, Kent. Good morning, world.
Good morning, world, indeed. And thank you for coming on the show this morning. I'm really interested to find out more about your background, because certainly the passion that you have for what you do really, really shines through. But let's start at the beginning, and let's talk about your journey up to doing what you do now. Can you tell me more about your background and how you got into your current vocation?
Sure. Well, I think you find most people who are involved in coaching, counselling, have got a bit of a journey and how they get into it. And I'm no different from that. I had a bit of a brutal childhood. I had the alcoholic father. And I think you find when you have a dysfunctional family and you suffer trauma as a child, you tend to shut down and you close off your emotions. I was lucky. I had a good group of friends and I just followed what they were doing. They were into studying, so I studied. They went to uni, so I went to uni.
Mm-hmm.
My best friend became a chartered surveyor, so I became a chartered surveyor.
Okay.
And it was fine. It was fine. But I knew at the back of my mind I was always interested in helping those who were suffering and making things right for them, but I didn't know how to do anything of that then. So life just sort of trundled on.
So you were following a traditional career path?
Yeah, just traditional.
But perhaps not a passion?
No passion whatsoever. But it was absolutely fine. I was quite good at it. I wasn't brilliant at it. But no, it didn't make my heart sing. And I didn't really feel I was doing that much.
So what was the point at what you when you thought, you know what, this really isn't what I want to spend the rest of my life doing. This isn't my passion. This isn't why I was put on this earth. What led up to that change?
So in 2002, I'd begun to look into sort of self-help and self-healing over the years. And in 2002, we moved to France and I left the sort of property world behind. We got a few sheets and my fourth daughter was born there. So I concentrated on looking after the sheets and bringing up my four kids.
Okay.
And then very sadly, in 2004, my stepson was killed in the tsunami on Boxing Day. And basically, we moved back home. We had another stepson who lived in UK, and we all wanted to be back closer to him. So we moved back.
Yeah.
And that had a huge impact on the family, as you can imagine. Mm. And then a few years down the line from that, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And that really was a wake-up call for me. I knew that stress had caused my breast cancer. I was absolutely sure of it. And so it was time at that point to change what I was doing, to really find something that I was interested in. And that's when I stopped completely involved in the property world and started doing a lot of study, a lot of research. And I did NLP, I did inner child, did nutrition, parts therapy, reductive psychology, gestalt, timeline, a lot of research. So I've spent a lot of time working through, and then I got into coaching.
Yeah.
So that's what's led me to what I do now.
And the interesting thing, and I've mentioned it on previous shows, is virtually without exception, every guest I've had on has been through a personal journey of some description. They've realised that whatever it was that they were doing wasn't their passion in life. They've had an event or events to deal with. They've made their way through that event or those events. I wouldn't say come out the other side, because sometimes we don't fully recover from certain things that happen in our lives, but they had an experience and they're better for it, and they're then taken on a new path, a new passion to help other people who might be going through similar things and experiencing the same perhaps trauma or health issues, and they don't know where to look. So you've been through a lot. So when we talk about the stress, the stress that then obviously led on to the breast cancer, was it just the general stress of, you know, working in the property industry, or was it particularly the event with your stepson, or was it just a combination of lots of things coming to a head?
No, it wasn't anything to do with the property at all or anything. Okay. Working. It was a lifetime of living. I think when you're traumatised a bit as a child, you live in stress and your brain goes and your mind goes at you're revved at hundreds of miles an hour.
Yeah.
So it was that. And then the stress, obviously, of my stepson and, just a lot of things all coming together. And I thought it's time that I need to sort me out properly and then really find a way to help other people, because that's what I've always been interested in doing. So.
Yeah.
That's what we moved into coaching.
Okay. So you mentioned that you studied NLP, inner child, parts therapy, reductive psychology. Tell us a bit more. I'd like to think people know what those things are, and I certainly do, yeah. Although I'm not sure about reductive psychology, but we'll come on to that in a moment. But perhaps you could explain what those four areas are in a bit more detail.
Well, ultimately, it all comes down to how your thoughts create your reality.
Okay.
So reductive psychology is really what I'm now working on, and it's the idea of not adding more modalities and more things you have to do. It's actually about taking things away from you, so you actually let your mind settle, so you get into a calmer state of mind, and then you can actually begin to live with the feelings that you have.
Okay.
So And that's really what I do now. That's what I work with. It's a mixture because every client is unique. Mm-hmm. So it depends on the individual needs of a client, what modalities or what parts I'll bring into to the conversations that we have together.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, a lot of people are suffering unnecessarily because they don't understand the nature of how their life experiences are created.
Yeah.
If I give you a little story here, it's an old Indian-American parable.
Okay.
And it's an old Cherokee, and he's teaching his grandson about life. And he says to his grandson, "A fight is going on inside me. It's a terrible fight, and it's between two wolves. One is evil. This one is anger, envy, sorrow, regret, greed, arrogance, self-pity, guilt, inferiority, pride, ego." And he continued, "And the other wolf is good. He's joy, peace, love, hope, serenity, mm-hmm. kindness, generosity. And the same fight that I'm having is going on inside you, and it goes inside everybody." And the grandson thinks about this for a minute, and then he asks his grandfather, "So which wolf will win?" And the old Cherokee smiles and simply replies, "The one you feed." And that really sums up what people do. The more energy you put onto the thoughts that you have that are negative, the more one that you feed is how your experience of life will come about. So it really highlights the story, the power of our thoughts and our experience of the world and our emotions.
Yeah.
So a lot of people find themselves out of balance, a bit like if you've been walking along a trip. And what you do is you flail out, you put your arms out to try and catch yourself as if you're falling.
Yeah.
Well, people find that a bit like they're out of balance in life, and then they metaphorically flail their arms out to get balance, and that can either be through overeating, drinking too much, addictive behaviours, anorexia, OCD, any number of different behaviours.
Yeah.
And they're doing that to try and get themselves back in balance.
Yeah.
And so those are visible behaviours, and that's what my clients usually come to me with, the visible behaviours that they want to deal with. But they're trying to deal with, these visible behaviours are actually trying to deal with invisible issues.
Yeah.
Feelings the clients don't want to address, and they don't want to sit with, or they don't even know how to address them. And so they indulge in these other behaviours to check out or numb out or avoid these feelings. And these feelings are created throughout your life experience, and they start when you're very young.
Mm-hmm.
They start when you've no way of actually discerning what truth is. So you just take everything that's given to you as truth. So if a parent, for instance, yells at you and tells you, "Get out the way, you're just a nuisance," or a teacher yells at you, "You're stupid," you take that on as a belief about yourself.
Mm.
And so starts you taking on negative beliefs. And people basically have a lifetime of negative beliefs that they gather up and they shove in a sack or a rucksack and they shove it on their back and they carry it around with them and it burdens them and they lug it
for
everywhere.
For years and years and years.
For years and
they
years.
Don't realise that the issues that they're having at 50, they all root back to something that happened when they were six, perhaps.
Yes. They don't realise that. And these beliefs, they hold you back in getting they can hold you back in what you want to get out of life. And so what I do when I talk to my clients, we really have a conversation together and we find a way of putting that rucksack down and leaving it to one side, which just frees you up. And one way of doing that is if learning how to understand how your life's experiences come from, because if you don't understand that, you're at the mercy of everybody else's opinion of you or external events. You become a victim basically of events and occurrences in your life, and that leaves you completely out of balance. My role as the coach is to let you see that you're not a victim, that actually only you have the complete power over how you live your life, and that you've maybe just got a bit out of balance in your perceptions and thinking and feeling, and that results in a lot of unwanted behaviours.
Yeah.
So every client, as I said, is unique. And so we go through talking together and we go on a journey, and that might involve using some inner child work or some NLP, which looks at language and how they talk to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
It might involve revisiting the past if there's a need for somebody to get some empathy and forgiveness so they can let go of something and so they can move forward. But we don't have to stay in the past because the past is finished.
Yeah.
And you really can't move forward if you keep on looking backwards. So we do move forward. And we look at the nature of thoughts. And we also talk about how you actually are not your thoughts. Mm. Your thoughts are just thoughts. Mm. You have 80,000 odd thoughts a day, some good, some bad. You can't control what thoughts pop into your head. But what you can control is which thoughts you engage in. So,
Which wolf you feed.
Which wolf you feed, exactly. So your thoughts are a bit like balloons that can float on by, and you can just stand back and let them float by, or you can grab hold of the string and take hold of it and feed it. And as you do that, energy flows where focus goes.
Yeah,
you start building up that thought and you give it power. And so when you spend a time in a conversation with me, you'll learn that you only need to give energy to the thoughts that are going to help and serve you. You can let the others just float on by. You can't stop them coming into your head. Nobody can control what comes into your head, but you don't have to focus on it.
So you learn how to hold on to the right balloons.
Yes.
I like that. That's good. That's good. It's interesting, you mentioned about balance, and when people go out of balance, they put into motion what they think are mechanisms to bring them back into balance, but they're often the things that are going to cause more imbalance, like overeating or addictive behaviours. And then they're on that vicious cycle, aren't they? They're on that vicious cycle where they're even more out of balance, so they indulge in those behaviours perhaps more and more.
Yeah.
And suddenly they're on that slippery slope down.
Yes.
And I'm sure there's people out there that can recognise that and can relate to that, and often don't know where to look for help.
Exactly. I mean, a lot of people can have an intellectual understanding of what's causing their problems, but an intellectual understanding alone of where your behaviour comes from isn't enough to stop it.
Yeah.
Most people know what to do if they want to lose weight, and they may desperately want to lose weight, but they don't do it. Now, why don't they do it? So they might have already gained their understanding that you're using food for comfort, for protection, for boredom, for reward, but that's not enough to stop them overeating. And that's where what I do, my work, comes in. It's takes you into a deeper, more profound level. So it's very simple, but it is profound.
So so what sorts of problems do people come to you with? Obviously, we mentioned weight, but what other addictive behaviours perhaps might someone be struggling with that perhaps they need help with?
Some of my clients have had anxiety, depression. I've had anorexia, OCD. Some just simply a bit more confidence. Anger. People can find it very easy to flip to anger, because then it's everybody else's fault and they don't have to look inwards. And so a whole range of things. And I do corporate work as well. And so from the corporate clients, it usually is building up resilience within a team or teamwork, which then helps the whole company pull together, and it usually has an effect on the productivity. So it's a very powerful thing to do for teamwork within a company.
Yeah. So when you're working with someone, and perhaps they come to you with whatever issue it is, they're in that, perhaps in that victim mode. At the point that they have almost that epiphany moment where suddenly they realise that they are not their thoughts, that they don't have to be a victim, that must be quite a profound moment of realisation for them, where they suddenly go, actually, I can take control of my life. I can be self-accountable. I can control the future. I can let the past go. That must be quite a moment for that individual to experience that particular moment where they have that realisation.
For some clients, it is like the sky's opening, huge insight.
Yeah.
And it's very emotional. And for others, it's a slow drip feed. And it takes a little bit longer, and it just slowly, over the few weeks that we work together, something changes in them. They just know they've become calmer, and then they begin to realise everybody's different in how they react to it. But I haven't had a client yet who hasn't come to that understanding.
To that realisation.
They have the power.
And
that makes all the difference. And then what happens is, there's a lovely little saying, all boats rise with the tide. So the issue that they've come to me with becomes resolved, but not just that issue, their whole life. It's an impact on their whole life. So,
and you touched on working with companies, and I'm finding more and more companies are seeing employee wellbeing as an investment rather than a cost. So what can be some of the benefits that a company might experience through engaging you?
So if you have a sales force, mm-hmm. it can help with the confidence of the sales force, team spirit, just a better atmosphere at work, resilience mm-hmm. to things that happen within the company, direction, goals. And usually when you have a happier team and a happier company, it impacts how people work, mm-hmm. work together much more, and it does impact on the productivity.
Yes.
So a happy workforce is a good workforce.
Which is a profitable workforce.
Which is a profitable workforce.
Because every company looks to the bottom line. Mm-hmm. And I think more and more companies are starting to wise up to the fact that if their employees are happier and healthier, then there's less downtime, there's more productivity, there's less sickness absence, and ultimately that helps the bottom line of the company, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Excellent. So let's talk about your plans for the coming year. So we're partway through 2019 now, but how is 2019 starting to unravel for you? What's happening this year for you?
Well, I'm hoping that I'm busy writing a book at the moment. It's called Life, It's an Inside Job.
Mm.
And it's basically a lot of metaphors, because I think metaphor is the most powerful way for people to understand really how their world works and to get the message right through. So I'm hoping that that will be published at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm about to launch an online weight loss course called Vibrant You.
Okay.
And I'm also looking to increase corporate work and, of course, obviously do my client work. I would like to do group coaching, and that's something I'm looking at, because I think the community that people get when they're involved in a group, whether it's on Facebook or actually physically, that all helps take people forward. So
excellent. I'm looking forward to your book coming out, and I'm sure I'll be one of the first in line to buy it. So can you give me a brief sort of synopsis of what the book's going to be about, just a brief summary?
Well, it's basically a lot of metaphors about taking somebody through starting off with their life not how they want it to be, mm-hmm. and the journey they go through to get it to where they want it, to get it to how they feel happy. And so that's
excellent. Looking forward to it. So you're hoping to have that out by the end of this year?
Hoping the end of the year, yes. A bit of work to be done.
Fantastic. So people out there are thinking, you know, if they can relate to some of the things that you've been talking about, I guess if they're a bit lost, they don't know particularly the way forward, perhaps they recognise they're in victim status and need some help to get out of it. You're looking at people that really need that sort of help. They need help with perhaps addictive behaviours. Their life is out of balance. How can people get in touch with you, Leslie?
So they can either go on my website, which is mindbodybalancecoach.com,
mm-hmm.
and just fill in a little form there, and I can get back to you, or mm-hmm. send me a text or a call.
Yep.
My mobile, which is 07947 049779,
mm-hmm.
and we can just have a chat and see how it would work best for the client to work with me. I can do Skype calls, meetings, mm-hmm. So all different ways.
Excellent. And there's lots of different therapies out there. I think there are over 400 different types. Why would people particularly, why do you think people should come to you as opposed to another practitioner?
So there are, as you see, over 400 different psychological therapies out there, and they're all nearly all based in the Freudian school of psychology,
mm-hmm.
which is very much that your past creates your future. So the past is revisited over and over in these therapies, and that to me is a bit like picking a scab in a wound.
Mm.
It keeps you in pain and actually delays the healing. I don't think perhaps that's the most effective way to move forward into balance and harmony in your life. So my coaching is unique in as much as, although we may have to visit the past, as I said, to gain an understanding of past pain and to let past pains that are causing your present behaviour, and to allow a client some empathy, sometimes that's required, and grieving mm-hmm. over the past,
mm-hmm.
and then to move forward into forgiveness and letting go. But I said before, intellectually understanding where your behaviour comes from does not in itself necessarily lead to change. So we don't want to dwell in the past. The past no longer exists. It's only your present that exists. And so I look to move you out of the victim status and into a state of responsibility and power for your life. And the conversation with my clients and that we have together, we explore how the life experiences are really created. And that's from the inside, from your own thoughts, not from the outside. And then my clients are shown a way to get a profound understanding of how they got to where they are, and another way, a clear way forward to get unstuck from their unwanted behaviours. And this is done by not adding more techniques, more modalities, more things to remember, hoops for clients to jump through, but actually by subtracting busy thought, calming the mind down, a bit like muddied waters.
Yeah,
you leave it still to let the mud settle. Mm. And when you do that, it lets you move forward into a place of peace. And you've also found, it said, all boats rise with the tide.
Mm.
So when one element gets sorted, you find that a lot of elements, your relationships, your money, your work, begin to improve. So
very powerful.
Thank you.
I'll do some post-show promotion during the week, and I'll put your contact details onto social media as well. But thank you for coming on the show, Leslie. It's been really interesting to find out more about what you do, and obviously your journey and your background and your experiences. But thank you for coming on the show. It's been great to have you on this morning.
Thank you very much, Neil, for having me. Thanks for listening, everybody.
After the break, we are going to have a chat about crash dieting. But before that, we have a classic from Fleetwood Mac. That was Fleetwood Mac and The Chain, or as it's commonly known to us older folk, the theme tune to Formula One back in the day. You're listening to the Health Matters Radio Show on Monday, the 15th of April 2019. I'm Neil De Silva. I hope you're all keeping really well. A quick reminder of the show's social media feeds on Twitter at Health Radio Show. On Facebook, search the Health Matters Radio Show and you can follow the show's Facebook page and you can like the page and get regular updates. You can listen again to this show and all previous shows on the media page of my website or via iTunes. Go to iTunes podcast, type in the Health Matters Radio Show and you can subscribe to the show's feed and listen to all the previous shows there as well. And my website is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. If for any reason you'd like to contact me privately or individually away from social media, then please go to the show's contact page and drop me an email there and I will be in touch with you from there. So for the next 5 or 6 minutes or so, we're going to talk about dieting, particularly crash dieting. So before we start talking about crash dieting, I have to make a distinction between crash dieting and intermittent fasting. The two are completely different. I'm a big fan of intermittent fasting. I'm not a big fan of crash dieting. So crash dieting is essentially a sustained restrictive meal plan that sustained as in we do it for weeks and weeks and weeks and sometimes months. But the problem is it's not sustainable in the long term. So it's about severely restricting your calories, sometimes as low as 500 or 800 calories a day, but day after day after day. Could also be things like a juice cleanse or eating one or two food groups for weeks and weeks and weeks. The length of time can differ with crash dieting, but the common factor is they always come to an end. It could also be things like meal replacement shakes or, you know, those sorts of things where you can't really keep on them for the long term. And normally people do it for weeks or maybe a few months, but ultimately they get sick of it because it makes them feel ill or it's just not sustainable. And then they stop it and they go back to their old habits. So we're going to go through some reasons why crash dieting is not particularly good for you. And in my opinion, you shouldn't do it. So one of the things that people post all over Facebook, when they start a crash diet, they say they've lost 10 pounds in a week and how great it's going. And they don't realize actually fast weight loss is actually quite dangerous. And it isn't sustainable. But generally speaking, when people lose weight quickly to start with, it can often be water weight because actually the body holds 4 grams of water for every 1 gram of carbohydrate that we consume. So depending on your body size and your type of diet, you could be carrying anything up to about 10 kilos of water in your system. So when you restrict your diet and you start to drop weight, you start to cut down on the amount of food that you're eating, down to, as I said, sort of 500 calories a day, your body will release water. And in the first week of a crash diet, it's actually quite common to see people on social media say they've lost 5 or 10 pounds in that week. And the problem is they're losing water weight. If you lose water weight, as soon as you return to a normal diet, the water will be retained again and the weight will go back up. The other thing to consider is if you're losing water weight because you're not eating enough calories, then you're obviously becoming dehydrated. And dehydration can be quite damaging long term to the body for all sorts of reasons. When you crash diet, it slows down your metabolism. So when you cut calories just to lose weight quickly, it can force your body into a condition called starvation mode. So your body realizes that it's got a sustained low consumption of calories, and it will slow down your metabolism to suit. Now, the body is very adaptive and very clever. If you skip calories for a day, say for example you do a 24-hour fast, it won't affect your metabolism at all. if you do weeks and weeks and weeks of low calories, your body will make adjustments because it thinks it has less food to depend on, and it will slow down your metabolism to balance and to mirror that consistent low calorie intake. And another thing as well, excuse me, is when you consume low calories, your energy levels can decrease as well, and you can get fatigued quite quickly. Crash diet also decreases insulin sensitivity. So for those of you that know me, you'll know that I'm a type 2 diabetes specialist. And insulin sensitivity with type 2 diabetes is one of the biggest problems that we have, particularly with people that are developing diabetes. So when you crash diet, your body becomes less sensitive to insulin, and it also affects the way that your body stores fat, and that in turn can increase the risk of developing type 2 diabetes as time progresses. It also affects hormones, particularly the hormones ghrelin and leptin. It causes a particular imbalance with these two hormones, and these two hormones are responsible for managing your hunger. What they can do is actually create incredibly powerful food cravings that might force you to binge on foods that you would not normally crave. And in addition to ruin your metabolism, what you can find is when you then go back to eating normally, your hunger pangs are more powerful than they were before you started to crash diet. And that effect, that imbalance in hormones, can last for years. When you crash diet, it can deplete your energy, deplete your body of energy, and it can affect your mood as well. So you might find that you start getting grumpy, or you get headaches, or you have difficulty concentrating. And in my opinion, this is no way to live your life. And, you know, life is to be enjoyed. Food is to be enjoyed. It's about eating the right foods in balance and in moderation. What's the point of doing a silly diet where you feel rubbish while you're on it? Because it will make you want to get off it even quicker. It can also leave your body, crash dieting can leave your body vulnerable to illness, because it can affect your immune system, and it can give you a decreased immune function, and that can lead on to other diseases, other health disorders, and some of these can become quite life threatening as well. And also, crash dieting can mask weight loss progress as you progress, because your body will then start to produce more stress hormones. So stress hormones, particularly cortisol, is the predominant stress hormone. And actually, when cortisol is high, your body will retain more water, which is why when people get stressed out, they can gain weight, not only because they want to eat comfort foods and emotional foods, so emotional eating comes into it as well, but the body will actually hold on to more water when stress levels are high. So how do you get around it? How do you lose weight safely and sustainably? Well, there's no quick fixes out there that are sustainable anyway. You know, it could have taken you 10, 20 years to get to where you are. You're not going to lose that weight in weeks. So have realistic expectations that it's a longer term journey if you want to do it safely and sustainably. Learn how to eat the right foods in balance and in moderation. Talk to a nutritionist, talk to me. You can contact me via my website. But if your diet's okay and you're happy with what you're eating but still want to shape up a bit, then maybe smaller portions could be key as well. And I would suggest quick fixes include cutting out junk food, drinking more water, and reducing down sugar intake in particular. And if you do want to lose weight safely and sustainably, work out your BMR, talk to a specialist, talk to me, work out your basal metabolic rate, and aim for a calorie intake of around 500 calories, or 300 to 500 calories a day, less than your BMR, and that will give you a safe level to work from. It won't be ridiculously low calories, like 500 or 800 calories a day, and it will help you to actually lose weight safely and sustainably, and more importantly, it will help you to keep it off as time progresses. And ask yourself one last question. If you're thinking about doing a crash diet or a silly diet, could you see yourself doing it in 5 years' time? And if you were to tell one of your children or your parents that you're following this particular plan, would they be happy with it? And more importantly, would you be happy with it? And if the answer is no, then you shouldn't do it. Learn how to eat proper food, in balance, in moderation, for a safe and sustainable way to lose weight. So that's enough for today. We're out of time. I hope you've enjoyed the show today. Thank you again, Leslie, for coming on the show. It's been great to have you on the show. A quick reminder, you can contact me via social media between shows. Please do so. Drop me a message, drop me a question, and I'll happily come back to you. If you'd like to come on the show, as Leslie has done today, to promote what you do and talk about your journey, then please do so. Please make contact with me via my website or via the social media feeds. And after the last song, we have the Channel Radio.